Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
The other day I was doing something, looking for videos or something, and I came across the old RTE series Hands. Do you remember that show? It was made in the around the 70s. Lots of mini documentaries about Irish trades and crafts. It's often rebroadcast on the telly. But the one that caught my attention was shoemaking, because my home county of Kildare was mentioned. It featured George Tutty from Naas. And we thought, let's see what's happening with the Tutties. Are they still in existence? And they are. And Michael Tutty, who would be George's grandson, is sitting in front of me in Studio 7, him from Tutties in Naas, which means they are still in existence. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Ray.
And still making shoes.
We're still making shoes, yeah. Still hammering away down in Naas.
Yeah. And George set up in, I think, if my memory serves me correctly, 1946.
Yes. Him and his wife, Nellie.
Right.
Landed in Naas.
And what did he do before that?
So he, a number of things happened, but he ended up in an industrial school out in Artane, and he grew up there, and that's where he picked up the trade as a shoemaker.
Right.
And then he did an apprenticeship down in Clare, then in Simon, and worked his way around Munster. And they he relocated up into Naas in the 1940s and set up their own business, which is still going strong today.
And was it a factory at one stage? Or was it always just sort of handmade shoes?
So it would be always, it's kind of always in the guise as is today. So it's a very kind of small factory setup.
Right.
I suppose Grandad, what he would have had a trade in like larger factories when there was a big shoe industry in Ireland and down in Shannon. So he would have kind of brought that essence to our workshop and kind of concentrated it down and made us a little bit more nimble, where we can make what a big factory would be making the same style of shoe all day, while we'd be quite flexible. We could be making a ballroom dancing shoe in the morning, followed by an equestrian boot, followed by a dress shoe.
But he sectioned off the various aspects of the process.
That's it, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And people have different skills.
Different skills, different personalities, yeah.
Yeah.
So we have everything we make. The whole process starts with making a last. So a last is your form of your foot.
And a mould, sort of thing.
Basically, yeah. And it determines the shape of the shoe, shape of the toe, instep, all of your size. You don't think about this when you're throwing shoes on in the morning. And then from there, we'll create a pattern, and from the pattern we cut it out a letter, we assemble it, and then we last it over the last, and it's starting to look like a shoe now, and we pull the mold out of it. We get our clients in and they try it on and see where it's fitting. Maybe it's a little bit too tight or too narrow or too wide. We make adjustments to the last, and then we go on and we build on soles, we polish it up and lace it up and get the clients back in again and try it on again.
There's a lovely bit from the original documentary, which the voiceover was written and performed by Ray McAnally, the late Ray McAnally, the actor, Angus McAnally's dad. And I'm going to play this for you because I want to ask you a question after. It's only 10 seconds long. Here we go.
Feet don't come in standard sizes. Your right foot is seldom exactly the same size as your left. And really comfortable shoes take that into account.
Oh, so there's the thing. So when you make bespoke shoes...
Yeah.
The right and the left could be different sizes, or are always different sizes?
Oh, always different always. Sizes. And I'm always laughing because I'd be down measuring a client's feet and they're peering over me and I'm writing down my measurements. And the most common question I get is my left the same size as my right? And it's rare that they are. There's always little differences, always nuances between them. But the differences are so small that generally the same size shoe works for everybody. But it's rare that everyone's feet are the exact same.
And you mentioned earlier on that there was a thriving shoemaking industry in Ireland. I'm thinking of Winstanley's in Dublin, and there was Whelan's at Coot Hill, wasn't there, up there? And there were places all over the country, and they're all gone.
Yeah, so like you had like Dundalk was a thriving down then you had the Cork and Dublin, as
Dubarry,
you say.
Dubarry, yeah. Tough.
So all the mass production is effectively gone from the island. And I suppose when that was, a lot of the Irish companies were providing for the domestic economy. And when imports started coming in the 70s, 80s, put a real squeeze on it in the 90s, virtually they couldn't be competitive.
Couldn't compete.
Couldn't compete.
Yeah. Just the scale.
Just the scale and down to the unit price.
Yes.
So that's where to survive in that market, you have to look at kind of finding a niche and finding a service that's a lot more personal, and it's not about scale. Yes. It's about the customer and the
bespoke, and also medical, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So we would be working, we providing a service to people who, without specialised footwork, can't walk. Right. So be it if they've leg length discrepancy where they need a platform under one foot, or if they have an exceptionally broad foot or exceptionally high instep, or just from an injury. Some people have an amputee and they have partial foot amputation, and that's where we'd have to come in and help with their balance and their gait, and we'd help with their walking. And just
that's a hugely important service then.
Hundreds of people, thousands of people now walking, yes, around the country wearing touchy shoes. That makes me massively proud that, yeah, we're helping them get, yeah, around their day-to-day mundane activities, or even sometimes extraordinary activities.
Yeah, like, yeah. So they're one part of your customer base, and then you have the people who love their shoes.
Love their shoes, love their design, love their, I suppose, coming in with creativity.
Yes.
And they just like see a blank page, you see leather hanging from the rafters, and we just go and we pick and we mix and match, and we have just, it's amazing the creativity that
I was talking to a man the other day who puts in kitchens.
Yeah.
And he was saying when he started putting in kitchens, there were 6 colours. so it's easy enough. He says now he has samples for 3,000 different colours for kitchens.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Like,
and I was asking him, does he give any advice? And he says, no, I stay out of that.
you never have enough colours with ourselves. Right. There's always a colour that I just don't have. I'll have to ring up my suppliers, be it tanneries in Italy, merchants across continent, and ask them, can you get this shade of pink for me, or this shade of purple, or a certain weight of leather? And,
right,
we can pull it in now, and that's a kind of the globalisation that's in the world now.
Are weddings a big thing?
Weddings, yeah. So big thing with ourselves is grooms. So like, yeah, there's been a huge kind of shift with grooms lately of why spend big money on a suit that realistically you're not going to wear a huge amount.
Yes.
You kind of invest in a pair of shoes that are going to last you.
Never thought of that.
Decades.
Yeah.
And especially a dress shoe that you're not wearing every day. It's going to be lasting you decades. And like, we have had a groom in last year, and we got a lovely dress shoe, and it was lovely and elegant, and he was absolutely chuffed walking out. It came back to me about four months later, and I was like, oh no, what happened with the wedding? What happened with the shoe? I was panicking seeing him coming in. And then he turns around and he's like, I'm never going to wear these. I don't wear suits for in my, yeah, business. So I wanted to turn these into smart casual that I can actually wear them going down to the pub or go to a restaurant. So we took off the nice fine leather sole and we built on a nice casual wedge, kind of a cream wedge. And he was absolutely chuffed. Been in for repairs and all since. So
You went away from the family business to come back.
I did, yeah. I suppose maybe that was something my parents were adamant that you're not going straight into the business.
Why?
I suppose perhaps, I don't know, maybe I'm talking out of turn, but perhaps my father didn't get the choice. He was 16. He went straight in, him and my uncle Eddie, two of them ran the business for a time, and then Eddie ran it. But I suppose they saw that, make sure that I wanted to spend my life doing it. So I went off to engineer, and I worked as an engineer abroad in America for 5 or 6 years, and then came back, and I suppose you kind of scratch that itch and you know that the grass isn't always greener on the other side, so you're happy,
yeah,
whittling away in a workshop down in Ace. And, yeah.
And that sense of, you know, that you were doing something that's been in the family since 1946, mm-hmm, and you're carrying on a family tradition, does that weigh heavy on your shoulders, or is it something that gives you joy?
No, it's great pride. Like, we have like a team of 10 down in Ace, and working with them and kind of seeing them sharing their knowledge and sharing their passion, yeah, for what they do. And even down to our newest addition of Leon, he's a young apprentice, 19, 18. Right. And he's kind of, we're kind of passing on that.
And how did Leon come to you? You know, it's because it's not, if you ask young people what to be when they grow up, very few say cobblers.
Yeah, well, I suppose, yeah, I just don't want to talk for
no,
him.
No, I know, fair enough.
He came to us, and right, he obviously liked what he saw.
The terminology around it, because is there open lacing and closed lacing, and what's the thing at the bottom of the holes?
Yeah, we could go on.
So
you have like your Oxfords, you have Derbies. Eyelids are the holes. So you can have a Derby that where the laces kind of open up like a book, and your Oxford are quite tight and
more stylized. And is the brogue still the little holes around the pattern thing?
So that's kind of a cool thing. So like brogues is like worldwide, everyone knows about them. But if you think about it, they actually originated in Ireland. Would have thought Ireland was a kind of a fashion trend place? So like if you think about brogues are the little decorative holes in shoes, and that's but what's the Irish word for shoe?
Brogue. Yeah.
So. Apparently, the story goes, gentry, so the Irish were working in the bogs, needed shoes to drain out the water after working in the bogs, so they had holes in their shoes.
Okay.
Gentry went, be it hunting, or they walked across the land, and they obviously needed the same kind of holes, but in time they became stylized, the holes got filled in, and they were called brogues.
Brilliant story.
It's amazing. Who would have thought? Yeah. You think about the Italians as trendsetters
so
here.
Functionality became fashion.
That's it, yeah.
It's a bit like Birkenstocks. Functionality became fashion.
Yeah.
Listen, Niamh is producing the show today, and she'll have to tell people in power in RT that I've asked you this, because it's... Anyway, her Doc Martens, she's going, because you do repairs as well, don't you?
We do, yeah.
Now, I said to her, they're unrepairable.
Unrepairable.
But there's holes in the leather. You see that there? You describe it there to our listeners.
I suppose across the ball of the foot,
there's
a hole where the first joint or the big toe and the hole where the small toe is. There, like if you want the holes filled in, it might be irreparable, but... if you're happy where the holes are, you can wear them away. But no, unfortunately, I'd say they have seen the end of their days.
And there's the other one there. There's actually a tear along the stitch line.
They've seen plenty of mileage anyway.
Yeah, yeah. You see at the heel there. Turn around there. See there. Push it in down at the bottom. Yeah.
I know.
There you see it. Yeah.
Yeah. So unfortunately, they're beyond repair. But if there wasn't the tears in the uppers. You can change the soles, you can change the linings inside. I suppose this
Can you get a Doc Martin sole?
Yeah.
Oh, you can get a Doc Martin sole.
I know there's plenty of repairs, a particular repair in Dublin that is specialising in Doc Martin soles. And there's, this is a perfect case not to throw your colleague under the bus. Conditioning your leather, so polish. Yeah. It's not necessarily.
She never did it. She never polished them.
So it's like when we're using sanitizer on our hands a lot. Our hands dried out.
Yes.
We need to get shoe cream.
Moisturizer. Moisturize your shoes. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Sorry about that, Niamh. Sorry about that. Michael, it's been a real pleasure talking to you.
No, it was an absolute pleasure talking to you, Rick.
Tuddy's in A, still there for Bespoke Shoes and everything else. And that Hands documentary is up on YouTube. If you just put in Hands, : the shoemaker, you'll get to see that. And it's a lovely 25 minutes voiced by the late Ray McNally. Thanks, Michael. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.